Time now for the first hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mrs. Future.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bobby.
Good afternoon. What a beautiful day.
It's nice here in Santa Cruz. 80 degrees plus.
Yeah.
I imagine San Francisco's got a nice blue sky today, too.
Yeah, it's a perfect sky. It's blue skies, no clouds. It's amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah. Did you hear that weird wind in the middle of the night last night?
Oh,
I mean, I did.
Right. Yeah.
Did you hear?
Yeah, I heard some wind. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you were suspicious of that, right?
Well, it sounded very much like the wind that preceded the lightning fires a couple years ago.
Oh.
Right? I mean, it was just kind of out of the blue. There's a beautiful, clear night, no wind, hardly a breeze. And then all of a sudden, there's like this fierce storm wind. And it lasts for a couple minutes, and then there's nothing. Well, and then there's another fierce storm wind. It's almost like we passed through the eye of a hurricane.
Well, I just think it was the elements wishing you happy birthday, Mrs. Future.
Sure, that must be
it. Happy birthday.
Wow. It was your birthday yesterday.
It's been grand.
Yesterday. Oh, happy birthday.
I have just been a funnel of love. I've been having so many people pour love over me. I'm just ecstatic.
Yeah, we had a great dinner at Casa Nostra, our favorite restaurant in Ben Lomond, outdoor in the Fairy Circle. You want to talk about a magical place to hang out with your friends?
Yeah, I told a few friends to drop in for a beer, you know, or a drink or something at a local bar, because they've got the tap room in the back, the bistro. Mm-hmm. And when I let them know that some people were coming, they created a 12-person table for us under the right under the redwood trees.
They have a beautiful circle of redwoods as part of the restaurant. It's just amazing.
Yeah. So, and the weather was perfect.
Oh, man.
We were outside, didn't even need a heater. Everybody was so comfortable, and it was so fun.
So is there a fairy circle outside in the restaurant?
That's where the restaurant is.
The tables are like right in the middle of the ring of redwoods.
It takes like hundreds of years for them to create that ring of redwoods.
Oh,
you know?
Thousands.
Yeah. Well, for the big ones. Yeah. These were pretty big ones, too.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You haven't been there with us, huh? We'll have to take you next time you come and visit. It's really a wonderful place. It's very magical.
Wow. Magic.
Casa Nostra in Ben Lomond.
It used to be Chalbella's in the past.
Yeah. They used to have this crazy stage show where the singing waiters and waitresses would jump up and do kind of a pole dance and sing songs, and it was really a hoot.
Yeah, it's a different management now.
It's been just really high-end, wonderful Italian food for the last bunch of years.
And then a nice Italian family running the place.
Yeah.
Too, so. Yeah. Definitely recommended. So we had a great time, and it continues. The bliss wave continues to this incredible weather today. Mm-hmm. And some great stories that I'm looking forward to covering with you all. And we might even have a guest in the second hour if he shows up.
We'll he was scheduled for last week, and he had a sudden change of plans and a big appointment.
News. So we'll find out.
Good news, and hopefully he'll remember this week.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we've got some great stories. And thanks, Bobby, for one of them. I'm going to ask you for more information on that as it comes closer. But the first thing I want to play for you is a piece from NASA, because NASA has announced that they have discovered... They confirmed 5,000 exoplanets. 5,000 planets.
Well, last time we checked in on them, it was around 1,600, and that was a lot.
And this is a 30-year journey of discovery led by NASA space telescopes.
5,000 exoplanets. Yeah. Boy.
The planetary odometer turned over to 5,000 yesterday with the latest batch of 65 new planets.
Wow. And here we are at the dawning of this era where we can contemplate what it would take to send cruise ships to other solar systems, have an exploratory ship that takes care of, kind of like Star Trek, but takes on multi-generational journeys to other stars with habitable planets.
Yeah, at least until we discover faster-than-light travel.
Well,
which
I think that some humans have discovered faster-than-light travel, but not all of us.
Yeah. Well, the
some
Moody
of us
Blues
are taking
said,
the slow road.
Thinking is the best way to travel.
Yes.
That's right.
Thinking with your light body. There are things that move faster than light, and it's thoughts.
Yeah. So that's a clue, the connection between thought and matter.
Yeah. Thoughts matter.
Yeah. So the 5,000 planets so far include small rocky worlds like ours, gas giants like Jupiter and bigger, and hot Jupiters, which are like Jupiters but very close to the sun.
Oh.
So they're super hot.
Yet they haven't become stars.
Yes, they haven't become stars yet. And there are super Earths, which are rocky worlds but bigger than us, which means you'd be heavier.
Oh, right, because more gravity coming from the center core.
Yes, and mini Neptunes. And then there's the planets that orbit two stars at once, and planets stubbornly orbiting the collapsed remnants of a dead star.
Oh, never give up.
Those. Each one of these is a new world, a brand new planet.
Wow. In our database, you mean?
In our database,
I mean, the planets have been there quite a while.
It's just, in our understanding.
We just discovered them.
And we hardly know anything about them. But we do know this, that our galaxy holds hundreds of billions of such planets.
Oh, boy.
And we know 5,000 of them.
That's an awful lot of missions for future space cadets.
Yep. And this all began back in 92 with Strange New Worlds when we discovered a type of neutron star known as a pulsar that was a rapidly spinning stellar corpse that was putting out millisecond bursts of radiation. Mm-hmm. And this strange star had several planets around it.
And
those pulses allowed us to reveal the planets, the pulses coming from it.
Right. Yeah, just because that little teeny bit of dimming of the starlight and the periodicity of how that dimming appears to us with the spectral analysis of what energies were being transmitted.
Well, the dimming came from the transiting process, which was a very exciting way to discover new planets as well. There were many, many planets were discovered with the transit. But there are other new ways, too, that they've discovered planets with. It's fascinating. Anyway, we have to go to a break. I've got a really interesting piece from this story from NASA where they've taken all these planets and they've put tones on them so you can actually hear the planets.
Nice.
I'll tell you more about that after the break.
Perfect for radio. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Yes, I'm going to play a one-minute piece. It's called Sonification. NASA sonified their data of the exoplanets and then just put them to sound. So instead of looking at a graph or a chart, you can hear a sound graph.
That's great. You can listen to the frequencies.
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about the music is created by playing a note for each newly discovered world. And there'll be more of them as we go on. It starts in 91, and it starts becoming quite cacophonous towards 2020.
Each new planet gets randomly assigned a note?
No, not randomly. The pitch of the note indicates the relative orbital period of the planet.
Okay.
How long it goes around its sun. And planets that take a longer time to orbit, their stars are heard as lower notes.
Sure, the lower frequency. Uh-huh.
And while planets that orbit more quickly are heard as higher notes.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, great.
And we're going to start 91. It takes about a minute and 17 seconds, and this is all the planets. Here we go.
Sonification of planets. Here we go.
And not too many in the early days. Thank you. You've been listening to the sounds of the planets discovered by NASA.
Beautiful, the sounds of the exoplanets. I love it. What a beautiful piece of music.
I said the pitch of the note was the relative orbital period. So the longer time it took to orbit were the lower notes, while the planets that orbit more quickly were heard as higher notes.
Fantastic. Cool? Yeah.
5,000 as of yesterday.
So we just listened to 5,000 notes then, huh? Did it just play each one? It played the planet as it was discovered through time?
At the time, yeah.
So each of them got a note.
Yeah.
Oh, that each was so pretty. A lot of them had very similar range of notes.
Yes, yes. There are more gas giants, for example, than there are rocky planets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's quite interesting when you look at the kind of planets and where they are in the scheme of things. But the rocky planets like we're on are much rarer.
Huh. Yes, I think Earth is so rare.
30% are gas giants. 4% of the planets discovered are terrestrial, small rocky planets like us. 35% are like Neptune, which are ice giants, or they can be close to the sun and they'd be hot giants.
Wow, so I guess they can measure the temperature and they can tell if it's hot or cold.
Yeah.
And they can tell how much the light is dimmed, which lets them know how big the planet is.
And the wobble, there's a lot of ways. The light dimming of wobble was a technique before the transit technique.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we have a caller, Mrs. Friedrich?
Yeah, we actually have a few. Let's talk to our very patient Randall from Pacific Grove. Hi, Randall.
Hey, Randall.
Hi, Randall.
Hello, hello. Did you ever see The Color Out of Space, the old version, or read the story by H.P. Lovecraft?
No.
What's the story about?
Well, I didn't want to just get on the fictional story, but it's basically about something transforming every living thing into another creation. I called because I had a couple of theories about everyone's learning what created life, what formed life, how life came about. When I was in college, they talked about little droplets of material. So alchemically speaking, using alchemy, I would say rock, air, fire, and water, combining, maintaining its temperature for whatever life form it is, would be the definition of life. So somehow these droplets lock in all those four basic elements, because the periodic table is not the elements. The elements is these four different elements, like rock, air, fire, and water.
Like, so, you say rock rather than earth, air, fire, and water. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, I know, because there's rocks on every planet, so that's why I don't use Earth. The question I have with Earth, they talk about fossil fuel, and they talk about so deep under the Earth's crust. Couldn't have gotten there from dead life forms just winding up that far down under the Earth. So my theory is it was always there. Because we want to know how carbon compounds combined with minerals to form life. So I would say there's your carbon compounds. So my theory is after the Earth cooled, it still had a very, very different atmosphere, different pressure, everything different.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a crock pot for life. So I would say oil. The oil and methane is basically what started locking together with other things to form life. I believe that there was oceans of oil on the Earth, carbon compounds. Because how are the dinosaurs going to get that far in the Earth's crust? It's more likely that that was from immense oceans of carbon compounds, and that just wound up trapped there.
All right. Well, I appreciate your
theories. Some other
colors,
but it's an interesting theory on that.
Yeah, it's really great stuff to speculate on.
Anything suggest that you, if you want to know more about that, what you would read?
I think the basic fundamental to start with is that we never came up with an explanation as to how we carbon-based life forms got formed. So there's no harm in looking at that possibility.
Yeah.
So you think we should go for direct imagination, and there aren't any particular people who've been thinking about this that you've been communicating with?
There's no way that the T-Rex is going to just take a stroll down to the middle of the Earth's crest and just die there.
Yeah, it's going to just make sense to you. You're like, how did it get down there?
All right.
Well, there are a lot of theories about that.
All right, thanks, Randall.
Appreciate it. Some people think that the Earth generates oil. you know, that it actually creates it.
Yeah, I've read.
I think it's ambiotic theories.
Yes, there have been people who believe that oil was a natural component of the gravitation and the spin of the Earth, and how lighter things get pushed out to the core and heavier things are down below.
And then in the 19th century, they really thought that coal played a role, or carbon played a role in early life.
Yeah.
You know, and that there's a lot of people who've thought about that.
There's a lot of people who've given this a lot of thought, looking at
electricity
the
combined with
the
stuff. Then there is Dr. Bruce Damer, who's been on our show many times, who has a modern theory about how life was born in a natural hot tub.
That's right.
Which we kind of relate to.
The cycle of life, right?
Yeah, outdoors near a volcano.
Let's say hi to our next caller. Right? Are you ready?
Yes, let's talk to our next caller, please.
Okay. Art in Big Sur. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Art.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Interested to hear you start the show talking about exoplanets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, you probably had the same experience I had. Sometimes you'll get your YouTube algorithm feed, and it'll deliver up something that's just like clickbait.
Yeah.
Yeah, so suggesting for you like it's your friend.
Sometimes I like it, though. You know, I sometimes
appreciate it. It's not entirely unpleasant, but I wanted to... I hope you give me a reality check on this one. I've been following James Webb Telescope pretty carefully.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they just posted what I think is going to be like an iconic image for, I don't know, years to come. You know the one I'm talking about?
I mean, of the first star that they're aimed at? Or
the first star, yeah, with the hexagonal lenticular exaggeration. And
I saw that one, yeah.
Yeah, I really think that one's going to be something for the ages, yeah. Mm. And so I was wondering whether it was just clickbait or whatnot, because I saw something last night that suggested that they've actually imaged, just for fun, not even scientific investigation, like 9 other images, one of which was, and it kind of blew my mind at the time, and I was kind of tired, so I fell asleep, and I had that idea in my head.
Yeah.
But it seemed to show an exoplanet that Webb had directly imaged.
Oh, really?
Already.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that you could even actually see exoplanets. I guess
that's why I'm thinking it might have been clickbait. Yeah, yeah, because, I figured you might lead the show with that, if that was what we had.
Well, it's definitely very Googleable stuff.
I mean, but then again, James Webb is not a visible light telescope either, right? It's picking up...
Right. So I thought, but you know how Hubble would oftentimes combine different, almost like a red, green, blue overlay of different wavelengths? So you'd have the visual overlaid with an infrared overlaid with, something different. And then they'd give you, like the Pillars of Creation and I think it's the Eagle Nebula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah,
I just thought that might be, worthy of comment. Not that that iconic image that we saw of the first light, essentially, from Webb isn't quite enough. You read into that or listened to some of the commentary, they're basically suggesting that the resolution on this thing is so insane that the main thrill that you get out of it isn't so much that, oh, hey, look, we've realigned the lenses. It's like, well, look at those galaxies that are a couple billion light years away that are in the background. Whoa, stop there.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's going to release a lot of amazing, stunning new images that, will just take off from where Hubble left. I'm excited. It's really looking great. $10 billion well spent.
Yeah. We've certainly spent $10 billion in much less productive ways.
Absolutely. Yeah. It looks like they have 4 other instruments that they're going to be switching on soon for getting perfect alignment and obtaining more sharper images. That's going to be great. Then there's a NASA update. The last one I heard about was on March 17th when they announced that they're going to have these new instruments coming online.
It wasn't green, was it? Daddy's Day joke. Sorry.
No, yeah, right. That is the same day, right? No, they
Little
called
green
it.
Green man. Oh, God.
It was more nerdy than that. It was multi-instrument, multi-field alignment. Multi-instrument alignment. They say it's going to take 6 weeks to do that. And when they finish that, we're going to see something else that will drop our jaws. You can count on it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Wow.
Put together all the data
into
one composite and show us some things we've never seen before.
Yeah. And, we're also able to combine all this information into stunning visuals and sound. So we can start to create visual landscapes that actually you wouldn't see if you were seeing these other planets and star systems, but you're basically, you know, hearing their atmosphere and things like that. You're
well, especially with, is it the Galileo that's been, I can't remember, I forget the name of the telescope that's been giving us all this great, as you were suggesting earlier, the transit.
The Kepler telescope.
The Kepler, there it is, Kepler.
Yeah.
It was one of those guys.
One of those famous astronomy guys, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, we've got to get going, Art. Thanks.
I will kick off. Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate your call. That's
good
wonderful.
To hear from you.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Yeah, nothing like those space images coming in. And thanks, Bobby. Bobby just sent me a link showing the alignment of the star, which is really quite remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, bright. It looks like the star of Bethlehem.
Right. All those spires of light really coming from the star, huh? Not just an optical illusion.
No, not just an optical illusion. Mm-hmm. Nope. So, in terms of other things that are kind of amazing of late, there's a something that's become very popular. It was originally designed as a deep fake tool. And this tool, you can take old photographs of relatives that have been long deceased and bring them alive by making the face come alive.
Oh, it's kind of on the late night comedian shows when they have, say, God and the mouth is moving kind of stuff.
Well, it's a little more advanced
than that. And the eyes roll around.
Yeah. And now
they animate certain features and turn a still photo into a live photo.
Yes. MyHeritage made use of deepfake technology to bring old photos to life. And now Deep Nostalgia, the latest thing, has gone viral. 100 million animations have since been created.
Wow.
And it's a genealogy company that is adding vocal storytelling to the mix.
Oh, a new kind of time travel, huh?
So what they ultimately hope to provide is that you provide a sample of the person who passed, of their voice, and they'll create them telling stories. You can put words in their mouth. You can write a script for them.
Yeah, we looked at an example of one that was very interesting, which was the Harry Houdini example.
Yeah, you want to hear Harry Houdini's voice?
Sure.
Yeah, something like that.
Let's see.
They recreated that. Yeah, here, this is what Harry Houdini, I'll just play a few seconds. Here we go.
Hello, my name is Eric Wise, but you probably know me as Harry Houdini. I was born in Budapest on March 24, 1874, to a Jewish family. My father was Rabbi Meir Samuel Wise, and my mother was Cecilia Steiner. In 1878, when I was four, my family immigrated to the United States, eventually settling in New York City. While growing up, I worked in various odd jobs to support my family. One of them happened to be locksmithing, so I became an expert at picking locks. At the age of 17, I started my professional career as a magician.
Okay, and it goes on from there. But you see, so somebody wrote a script for Harry. Now, supposedly, they based that voice on his actual voice.
I don't know. It sounded very much
like
a man or something.
Could be more realistic.
It sounded very computery.
Yeah. And we went and we looked to see if there was actual sound of Harry Houdini's voice on YouTube.
Yeah.
And there is.
It sounds, you know, he died in 1926. Right, so the recordings
were
very
sketch.
Rudimentary.
Right.
Yeah.
But the idea is that people are thinking of this now, right? And it's just going to get better. So to be able to bring photos to life with a story might be an interesting thing to
one of the great things about it was to see the storytelling of the use of old photos with an animated narrator from an old photo.
Yeah.
It was kind of like the Knowledge Navigator.
Yeah.
It was very cool.
And in a sense, we kind of do that. You know, when you look at old photographs of your family, it's often really good to see it with somebody who actually knows a lot of the people that are in the book, and they can give you the background.
Yeah,
the story.
Right. Jog their memory and get the stories.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can have that person be in the direct. There are probably people in the past in your family that knew the family better than those that are alive.
Uh-huh,
and,
sure.
To animate them and have them tell their stories. Be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you an interesting thing. You know, my mother had Alzheimer's, but before, you know, when she started to have symptoms I would put her in front of my video camera
yeah.
and have her tell me stories. And then as it progressed, mm-hmm. I would play the video, and she was totally entranced by the video.
Seeing herself on the video?
Seeing herself. And it was as if she'd never seen herself again or seen it before, you know, for the first time. But she would recognize herself. Mm. And I would say it's very important to try to do that if you have family members that...
That's so interesting, because that's what motivated me to get into video originally, too, was a desire to record my dad and my mom. Actually, my mom had already passed away, but to get the story from our families of the past and get it
down. Those who were still alive. You remember your aunt had some amazing stories. We got those down before she passed.
Right.
Fantastic.
Yeah, my aunt I was named after. She always loved to tell jokes. Got a few of them. She's great. The one who would say... Now, this little old lady, she was 4'2", and she was a nun. She'd been a nun since she was 15 years old.
Your namesake.
My namesake, right? And she would talk about how whenever she was worried about breaking the law, because, for instance, if she was going down a one-way street, and, you know, my family is notorious for having bad drivers in that generation, and she would say if she was going down the... The wrong way on a one-way street.
Yeah.
She would just defend herself by telling the officer, "Well, officer, I'm only going one way." You know, and back in the day, there was not so much animosity between nuns and police officers, and you know, everybody was kind of getting along. And
yeah, it reminds me of the traffic.
Able to have a joke.
It reminds me of the joke is, "But officer, I was going to go straight, but the sign said no, you turn."
And that's why you always need to be cautious about following signs.
Context is the key.
Don't abandon your ability to think your own original thoughts.
Watch for commas. So that's a good use for AI, I thought, for doing that. There's another story that I put in how AI is being used to fill in the missing gaps in ancient texts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So now AIs are making stuff up?
Yeah, they're making stuff up based
on
what's there.
So we shouldn't be blaming the fake news on malevolent humans. We should just figure that the AIs are learning to talk.
Well, come to think of it, you know, I would like to have the AI create what's next with, the Ukraine situation, see what they come up with. You know?
They have to watch the series Servant of the People first, which is Volodymyr Zelensky.
That's hilarious.
That brought him to fame. Yeah, it's a brilliant series.
It's up on
series.
Netflix now.
I highly recommend it if you haven't discovered it yet.
It was a TV series where he was the comedic star, and where he was a high school teacher who was recorded by one of the students when he was doing a rant about politics and how we need to have
an honest person,
a normal person from society to be president. And that clip went viral, and before long he was president.
Yeah, it's really art creating reality here. So if you want to improve reality, go make a really convincing, truthful, entertaining satire of the reality that is, and, you know, maybe you'll get a chance at creating a new one.
Yeah, maybe it'll happen. The only other person I heard had done that was Timothy Leary.
What did he do?
He created a movie where he ran for governor of California and won.
I never saw that one.
No, you didn't, because it was seized by the FBI.
Oh, they couldn't.
The FBI archives.
You know, that's so interesting, because the idea of imaging, when you put the image in people's heads, and especially with so many people having the same image, beliefs are the vehicle of manifestation. So having a powerful video image is a way of creating beliefs, true or false.
Yeah, it's a way of tricking the brain into creating things that way.
Sure.
You know, change the narrative.
That's right. So many people are afraid of violence in the world, even though the only violence they've ever experienced has been on television or in movies.
Yeah.
Right? And yet they go through life with all of these horrendous images about what's possible, and thus they live in fear.
Change narrative, change everything.
Yes, right. Change the story inside, and you will change your whole emotional relationship to everything.
So. Save the cheerleader, save the world.
Yeah, I like that one too, heroes.
We have a call. Caller?
Yeah, right. Steve from Santa Cruz. Hi, Steve from Santa Cruz.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Futures. Happy birthday, Mrs. Future. Yay.
Thank you. Oh, Steve. Man, it's been over the top.
Now I want to go over there, Casa Cosa Nostra.
Casa Nostra. Casa Nostra.
I like that little place. Stop there for a drink with a friend under the trees. It's a charming little spot.
Isn't it? It's so heartwarming. It just, everybody is just extra happy because you're surrounded by the trees. I have one friend who's, she's really a nature girl, and she just immediately sat down on the bench and just put her back up to the trees. And, you know, she didn't need to talk for 5 minutes while she just soaked it all in. It was fun.
Yeah, they're alive. They're alive for sure. In fact, a friend of mine and I made lasagna yesterday afternoon, evening. It took us like 3 hours to make stuff and about $40, you know, and it came out pretty darn good.
That's
Well, that's very
that's
cool.
That's a treat.
I had lasagna last night at Casa Nostra.
That's why you guys are on the same page.
Great. $20 is what it cost.
After making it by hand with my friend and seeing what goes into it, my God, I'm happy to go out and pay $20 for it.
Yeah, right. It was definitely worth it.
Hey, listen, Steve, we got to go to a break, so I don't want to cut you off because you probably had more to talk about than lasagna.
Hang on.
You want to hold on? Okay, great. We'll be right back.
Okay, great.
We'll
be right back.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Me too.
Yeah. So let's go back to our caller.
Steve from Santa Cruz.
Steve, welcome back.
Hey, guys, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you okay. Yes.
You're loud and clear.
Yeah. Hi, Bobby. Hey, so I got a pen pal friend that I keep in touch with through email from high school. Mm. And she's an old friend that I went to high school with down there in North County, San Diego. And she keeps me posted on what's going on in her world. But she told me yesterday, she said, it's 80-degree weather, Santa Ana conditions, offshore winds, hot down there. So we kind of are having the same thing up here.
Yeah, it seems like it, isn't it?
Well, when I lived down there, the Santa Ana conditions were a common term that's thrown around, and the wind blows off the Borrego Desert out there and comes across over the plains and the hills and ends up blowing offshore in the ocean.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm wondering, we kind of have a Santa Ana effect up here, but yet we don't have a desert here. I was wondering, is it just coming from the Central Valley?
The wind?
The heat.
The heat from this. That's a good question. I really don't know myself.
Yeah,
Bobby,
I can
you have
only
a clue?
Imagine. I do know that we're having an incredible solar flare cycles. There's all kinds of solar radiation hitting us, besides the fact that it's the first day of spring. So winter is over, and it's not surprising to get heat, but that doesn't really address your question. I don't know climate-wise why we're having so much heat right now.
You know, you guys have been down south. When they get to Santa Ana's, you get that hot, dry weather that comes across.
Yeah, I know that. It's much drier than this, though. I mean, I think we have much more humidity.
Yeah, but sometimes we get something that feels real similar. It's not identical, but it's
where would the
similar.
Heat come from?
Yeah, so I was wondering. I was wondering if it's like kind of a carryover from down there. Is it coming up and over, or maybe the Central Valley? It could be the Central Valley when the Central Valley heats up.
You think it just can heat up that much and just skip the mountains and come on over to us here on the sea?
Yeah.
Bobby, I think you have a comment on that. And also, check to windy.com, and you'll see the flows of all the winds right now.
And you can see the temperature and the direction and the speed of the wind in a beautiful map.
Yeah. And it looks like a lot of the weather for us right now is coming from the north.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm digging it. I'm digging the warm weather. It reminds me of something in the mid, I think the late 90s. We had a real similar winter. We had a couple months of intense rain, and then we had a heat wave that hit, and then we had another heat wave, then another heat wave, and when it was over. That's what's going on. Same thing.
All right, well.
Yeah, windy.com. Check it out.
Windy.com.
It would be
really
appreciated.
Yeah.
Have a lovely
And Bobby has something to add to the conversation here. Bobby?
I got a weather station with a wind vane, and it tells me the wind directions, and then it gives hourly reports and the wind speeds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And what I noticed is, you know, when we had either a big storm coming in, the winds would start from the east, and it looked like there was a high pressure, like in the valley or in the east of where I'm living here, and then it would be rushing across, and it would be so violent that the fences that run north and south, if they were old, and they would just fall over from this last winter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I also noticed that just before the fires, too, that the winds were coming from the east, like the Santa Ana winds.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I was thinking. It's really similar. It's those powerful winds that drive out of the east, and they blow across. Hey, thanks for that tip, Bobby.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it's a high pressure in the east part, and then it pushes the winds toward the ocean, the other direction. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, the last night, the winds that we felt, I do think they came from the east, but it felt like we went into the eye of a hurricane just because it was so fierce, and then it was so calm, and then it was so fierce again. It was sort of like crossing through a storm zone.
This is weird. Now Windy is showing it coming from the south. Weird. Huh.
You mean since you updated?
No, since we've been talking.
Oh.
Very strange.
Oh, the AI has heard us talking about Windy and said, let's get a new reading.
Hey, thanks for a great show.
Yeah.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate your calls. Bye.
Yeah, get to the bottom of this here. Goodness.
Windy. Were we looking
Windy.com.
At stored data before? What happened? I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
From east to south in an instant.
Yeah. All right. You think the weather's complicated? Bobby sent me this story last night. Quote: Our universe may have a twin that runs backward in time. An anti-universe running backwards in time.
That's a really good
could
story.
Explain.
Now that we're on this side of the equinox, we just left.
That was Gabby.
That was
you.
An anti-universe running backwards in time could explain dark matter and cosmic inflation.
Oh.
You know, when I was taking a class,
what about regular inflation?
It was called the Tao of Physics at Berkeley.
Uh-huh.
And he was explaining that a lot of physics can be explained if you actually take the clock and go backwards. And then they would take these high particle accelerator particles. And the only way they could explain after the collision what happened is only if you could take time and turn it backwards. And then you could explain it.
Hmm. Well, this one postulates that there might be another anti-universe running backward in time prior to the Big Bang.
Hmm.
Prior.
Right. Yeah.
Weren't we watching a recording of an alien the other day that supposedly 50 years ago was being
1964.
Interrogated about the origin of the universe? And
he was
saying, you people don't understand enough. I can't explain to you what you don't understand because the universe before your universe existed. Just that's the nature of things. There is no beginning or end. There's just moments where things move forward.
Well, our concepts of space and time are still somewhat primitive. We like to think we're pretty advanced. We have some pretty advanced models of understanding reality that seem to hold up. The standard model, for example. But we'd also know there are holes in it, and it might be something entirely different. It might be something as big as this, as an anti-universe running backward in time prior to the Big Bang. You know, how do you prove something like that even exists?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how do you know? Unless...
Well, someone thought of it. It's a good idea.
Well, you
must exist then. The thought exists.
Well,
so perhaps the whole universe exists.
Well, they say that the idea assumes that the early universe was small, hot, and dense, and so uniform that time looks symmetric going backwards and forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't get my head around that.
Well, that time is symmetric going backward and forth. Forward and backward in time are
they're mathematical concepts.
Same way.
If you're just talking about the mathematics of time, it's very easy to think about time going backwards and forwards. But if you're sitting here in the first day of spring and you're thinking about time and you're thinking about wishing you could return to a favorite memory.
Oh, time
isn't
time is
really
like,
mathematical that
time
way.
Time is like the wind. depending on how I feel it.
You can re-experience things yes. in your mind, in your thoughts. You can regenerate the feelings, but the actual entire moment in the universe where everything lined up for that specific thing, you'd have to adjust the entire universe to make that thing happen again. All you can adjust is your thoughts about it.
Well, thoughts are a good place to start.
That's right. They are.
That's what we have available. Mm. So anyway, you want to know more. It's called Our Universe May Have a Twin That Runs Backward in Time. And it gets into neutrinos, dark matter, how dark matter makes sense when you have a universe that runs backward. The neutrino could exist in this kind of universe as well. The theory implies there'd be no need for any what we call inflation, that rapidly expanding size of the cosmos that happened after the Big Bang, the giant poof, you know, that there's no need for that in this theory. And if that's true, then experiments to hunt for gravitational waves or to pin down the mass of neutrinos could be answered with designing your scientific experiments to consider that this mirror anti-universe might exist.
So if we could go backwards in time, how far back can we go?
Well, this would go, I think that's what the alien pointed out, is that the idea of linearity backward and forward is not quite able to embrace the idea of time. Time is a much bigger thing than that.
Uh-huh.
Or even our concept of time.
Oh, and the alien also said there's only
space
now.
And
the only thing that there really is this moment right now.
Well, a lot of the enlightened masters of our species even say that, mm-hmm. you know, and people who wake up to the moment outside of the clock.
And you can fill your now with recordings of the past, and then that feels like time travel.
Yeah, so maybe that would be useful for tuning into this anti-universe, Amos.
And you can read a story is an imaginary future universe, and you can time travel to the future that way.
Yeah, and I can imagine I'm on Alpha Centauri right now.
There you go.
Yeah,
and then you can put on your VR headset and look around at some kind of creation, and there you are.
Yeah. It reminds me of the idea is if you want to easily travel to another planet or another star system, if you could change size, then come back to normal size again.
Oh, so you could go from being just a little neutrino to being Dr. Future and then back down to a neutrino again.
I mean,
you could get someplace pretty fast.
I mean, yeah, you could. I mean, like, for example, like, you know, I look at here, I can see the parking lot in front of KSCO from where I'm sitting. It takes me maybe 30 seconds to get there. But if I were an ant, it would take me an hour. At least. So if I was the end, I could get large, walk outside and come get small again. I think the trick is to be able to change and come back again. then you'd be able to do a form of space travel that might be very fast. So we could do that to other stars, get really large just for a moment, and then small again.
Well, I'm going to have to think about that. And we're going to have to go to our break. For some traffic, news, and weather. We got Sam Quinton waiting to bring y'all up to speed. And then we'll be back with more Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. I'm Bobby B. Wilder. This is KCO Santa Cruz.
Bye.
See you in a few.